Hi, this is Randall Schwartz, host of Floss Weekly. This week, Simon Phipps joins me. We're going to be talking about identity management with KeyCloak. You're not going to want to miss this, so stay tuned.
Netcasts you love.
From people you trust.
This is Twit.
Bandwidth for Floss Weekly is provided by CashFly at CacheFly.com.
This is Floss Weekly with Randall Schwartz and Simon Phipps, episode 488, recorded June 20th, 2018, KeyCloak. This episode of Floss Weekly is brought to you by IT Pro TV, flexible and entertaining training for your IT career. Visit itpro.tv/floss and use code FLOSS30 to get a free 7-day trial and 30% off a monthly membership for the lifetime of your active subscription. It's time for Floss Weekly, the show about free, libre, open-source software. I am your host, Randall Schwartz, Merlin at Stonehenge.com, bringing you each week various interesting open-source projects and people and sometimes open hardware, everything open on this show. We've been running this show for 10 years, and the variety of subjects has just been so amazingly cool and awesome to me. Joining me once again is my lovely and talented co-host, Simon Phipps. Simon, welcome back to the show.
Well, thank you very much, Randall. It's a pleasure to be back. I'm speaking to you from the United Kingdom, where the sky is kind of blue with white bits, and there's no rain, so this is all good.
Cool. And I am speaking to you from an unusual location, although I was here 3 years ago. A Pearl Conference is held every year, and it's in a rotating set of places because it's whoever comes up with a good enough bid to be able to do the Pearl Conference because it's a low-cost conference. So we have to find places that have cheap hotels and good conference rooms, things like that. So actually, I should finish that out. I'm in Salt Lake City this week for the conference. I've had a great time so far. Final day of the formal sessions today, so I'm looking forward to seeing that as soon as we get done with this. Eating at some really amazing places, the Bayou restaurant, Cajun sort of restaurant with I had they call gumbo laya, which is gumbo dumped on top of jambalaya. I tell you, the sausage was great. Everything was wonderful. So I've had a great time being here. This is not about where are we, but it's always kind of fun to open with that. Today's topic is KeyCloak. KeyCloak is open source identity and access management for modern applications and services. And it's a Red Hat project. And so it has all the usual open source stuff about how Red Hat does open source. But it has features like single sign-on, standard protocol. So it talks OpenID, OAuth, things like that. LDAP and Active Directory linking, social login, centralized management, identity brokering. This could be a buzzword bingo show. I don't know. There's a lot of stuff going on here, though. These are all pretty simple words. We're going to be joined in a few minutes by Stian Thorgersen. I hope I said his name right. He's one of the two founders of KeyCloak. And also with him, Sebastian Blanc, who is part of the team. And he does things. He's also like KeyCloak evangelist, which means this is a perfect place for him to be today. So, Simon, what do you know about this?
This is the first time I've seen this project. I've seen other IAM projects before. I actually helped start a company called Forgerock that has now gone rogue and closing its source down. The actual process of authenticating people is challenging, but the real magic lies in the administration. It lies in giving people roles, revoking capabilities, telling applications what people are supposed to be able to do. And so that's where all the real magic lies. This piece of code looks like it's the easy developer glue for somebody who doesn't need too much of that stuff. So I'll be interested to hear just how far back and how far out the code goes. Otherwise, it looks like a very useful library for letting a developer have easy authentication without having to get too mired down in SAML and OAuth. How does it look to you?
Well, I'm thinking, I haven't looked too much at the code and stuff because I didn't have much time because I'm busy with the Pro Conference this week. But one of the things, I think what you're talking about, if I got this right, is authentication is not really an exciting thing to do. I mean, you can authenticate by having a Facebook login, and then you're also that person here. But I think what you're talking about that's a lot more difficult is the authorization matrix behind that. So I'm Randall on this site, but what can I do as Randall, and how do we keep managing that? Do we create groups so that I'm a member of the admin team, or do we have assign a bunch of attributes to each person individually so that they might be so everybody's a snowflake? I mean, you got to think about things like this as you're setting this stuff up. And I got to tell you, my other pet peeve about all these places that have social media logins is they'll say, log in with Google. Okay, so I go, oh, now I won't have to create an account here. I can just log in with Google, right? Then they make me fill out a whole bunch of stuff about me again. And it's like, well, why did he even go to Google then? That doesn't make any sense. You know, if you're going to have to then make me create a username, in fact, that's what's really weird. Okay, so why aren't you just using my Google ID as my username since you made me go there? Why do they do that, you know?
Well, I do. It's because there's two different words here. There's authorization and authentication. Authorization is telling the app that it's okay to let you in. And authentication is telling the app it's okay to let you in. Who are you? And authorization is once you're in, what can you do in the room? And they're using Google or Twitter to do the authentication to verify that it's you that's coming into the room. But they're then making you create an account locally so that they can set up the authorization for what you're allowed to do once you're in the room. And so they should be I don't know whether there's an easier way of explaining it to people, but those two things, authorization and authentication, are separate animals. And explaining them separately would make it a lot clearer to people why they're going to Google, letting Google log them in, and then still having to do a whole load of account setup. Maybe this Keycloak project has got some explanations of that will make it more logical to people.
Sounds like we're about to put our guests on the spot here because I don't think they were thinking of what we'd be asking, but that's always fun. It's always pretty great. But before we bring them on, I do have an important message because this episode of Floss Weekly is brought to you by IT Pro TV. Do you know someone who wants to break into IT but doesn't know where to start? Are you looking to advance your IT career? Whether you're just starting out or if you're a seasoned IT professional, IT Pro TV is the only source you'll need. Learn the skills to pass the most in-demand IT certs from CompTIA and Cisco to EC Council and VMware, IT Pro TV has you covered with over 4,000 hours of binge-worthy on-demand training. New content is added daily, so you'll always be up to date. Conveniently stream IT Pro TV's courses live and on-demand worldwide via Chromecast, Roku, Amazon Fire TV, Apple TV, PC, or by using their iOS or Android apps. Empower your team with interactive IT training they'll actually enjoy watching. Gain full control over your team's training schedule and track your team's results via IT Pro TV's Pro Portal. See metrics like logins, viewing time, courses viewed, tracks completed, and more. Accelerate your career with effective and entertaining IT training from IT Pro TV. Join the more than 100,000 IT Pro TV members today. Visit itpro.tv/floss to learn more about IT Pro TV's team solution and to request a free team trial, or sign up for an individual monthly membership with a free 7-day trial at itpro.tv/floss. Use code FLOSS30 to receive 30% off your subscription for the lifetime of your active subscription. Premium subscriptions, which include unlimited Kaplan IT training practice exams and virtual labs, are normally $857 a year, but you only pay $600 when you go to itpro.tv/floss and use code FLOSS30. Flexible training, binge-worthy content, life-changing results. And we thank IT Pro TV for their sponsorship of Floss Weekly. And let's go ahead and bring on our guests. Let's start with Stian Thorgerson. Welcome to the show.
Hi, thanks.
And where are you speaking to us from?
I'm speaking from Bergen in Norway.
Bergen, Norway? I'll be there in a few weeks.
Oh, cool.
I'll be on a cruise.
In Bergen?
I think they're trying. Yes, I'm gonna. Apparently, the local Linux users group, or whatever it is, I forget who it is I'm in contact with, but they said, "Are you coming to Bergen?" I said, "Yeah." And so probably lunch or something, because I'm there from like 8 a.m. to 5 p.m. So all I want to do is make sure I go to a place that has minke whale, because last time I was in Norway, I ate minke whale and I really enjoyed it, and it really upsets my sister-in-law who went to minke whale watching up in the Pacific Northwest and said, "Those are endangered. How dare you eat those?" But they're not endangered in Norway, so I definitely want to make sure I get some minke whale on this trip as well, just so I can Facebook her and just, guess what? I'm eating that stuff that you want whale watch for. Okay, so let me also bring on Sebastian Blanc. Sebastian, welcome to the show.
Hey, hello. Thank you for having me.
Cool. And where are you speaking to us from?
I'm from France. I'm located in the southeast, in a small town near Cannes and Monaco on the French Riviera. So it's really hot today. The summer is starting. So, but yeah, I'm enjoying the start of the summer here. So I'm
cool. Happy. Well, thank you, and welcome to the show. Let's start with Stian. Give us the 30,000 foot view. What problem am I trying to solve when I'm reaching for KeyCloak?
So the reason why we started the project was because we found that you had two options for securing your applications and services, right? So you had the heavyweight IDP solutions like ForgeRock, which can be daunting for people to get started with, or you had your build yourself thing from using frameworks and libraries. So we wanted to have something that was easy to use, that was application focused, that would also fulfill some of the use cases that ForgeRock can do. So that is what we're trying to do, is to make security easy for application developers.
And so how long has KeyCloak been around?
We started in 2013. It actually started with two separate prototypes initially. I was doing a prototype on focusing on making the software as a service kind of approach, well call it security as a service, where you had this out of the box experience for application developers rather than to use the frameworks. And then another guy was doing a more of a framework for REST APIs, Java based REST APIs. And we joined the two together in early January, I think, and we had our first release later on in 2014.
Okay, and so I'm sure there are plenty of other players in this space. What makes KeyCloak unique?
I don't think there is that many that has that same angle that we have with being application developer focused, and and then other things that we try to avoid is to avoid feature creep, and we carefully selected that we want to choose OpenID Connect and SAML and not support other protocols, legacy protocols, and we have extension options for those that want to do it, but we're not going to put those into the code base to prevent the code base from being bloated and for having a sleek distribution that works for folks.
Is this code? Sorry, go ahead.
We obviously, we're a true open source project, right? We accept lots and lots of contribution from the community, and we're always open to talk to people.
And so let's say I already have an existing sort of, I'm maintaining my own internal username and password hash table in my web application. Can I just use the part of KeyCloak that lets somebody also log in with Google and maintain a Google ID in my login tables?
No. So you integrate with it through OpenID Connect, right? So you're basically moving your whole authentication to KeyCloak. You can include your users from your existing database. We have support for you to plug in your own custom user stores. We can read users from LDAP, or we can read users from your custom relational database or wherever you've stored your users.
Okay, that's good to know. I just wanted to see what this the smallest piece of thing I can add in here, but apparently that's a all or nothing flag in there somewhere. Okay, let's let Sebastian answer a few questions here. So what's your relationship to the project, and how did you get involved?
So I joined the team about 2 years ago. I was already at Red Hat working on another project, I was already really excited by this security, this project KeyCloak, because it really solves a problem that all the developers hate: security. It's something that people really hate to do, and most of the time they do it at the end of their project, and they do it in a bad way. And so I was really excited by this project, and I was speaking at a lot of conferences, and I was just demoing that. And Jan said, "So, do you want to join the team?" So I joined the team, and my main role inside the team is so you have the KeyCloak server, but then for each application that you secure, you have to install a small library. We call that an adapter, to talk with the KeyCloak server. And I'm working on these libraries, And the other part of my job is, well, traveling the world to go to conferences and give talks, workshops about Keycloak. So that's my role inside the team.
And is this mature? Can I use it today?
Oh, sure. Yeah. You can. A lot of people use it in productions, small companies, big companies, organizations. Yeah.
And what are some of the languages supported by your libraries?
Okay, client so side? We, yeah, client side. So we have a whole set of Java libraries. So if you have an application server, we have libraries for that. We have a Node.js module if you are more on the Node.js side. Then, of course, we have a JavaScript library for each web app that you want to secure, though you can use this JavaScript library. We have support for Spring Boot, Spring Security. Well, currently we are working on a generic adapter, as we call it, which is more like a sidecar application that you could ship with any technology that you want. And this sidecar application will just intercept all your calls and do all the magic that our library does. But that is what we are working on right now. So basically,
Does the JavaScript library mean that I could actually have my browser talk directly to the Keycloak server and get some sort of authentication token that I could pass back to my application?
Exactly. That is the most common use case. You will use it to get the redirect, so get the login screen to Keycloak, you log in and you come back to your app and with a token, and then you can use this token to call any service that is also secured with Keycloak.
Well, I didn't hear you say Perl, but I guess that's sort of a dinosaur these days, so nobody does anything in Perl anymore, except the millions of people that actually do. So that's kind of crazy that way. So can you describe, I listed a bunch of things off the front page of your website. There must be a lot of different modules that all play together well?
Basically it's pretty easy. You have two main things. You have the server that you deploy right wherever you want. It's just unzip it and start it. And then, yes, you have these small adapters that you have to install into the applications. It's not that many modules that you have to manage to set up your security for your application.
So now, just to be clear, is Keycloak a full authentication solution itself, or is it just a gateway for me to use some external authentication service like an OpenID service or a corporate SAML service?
Oh, it's a full IDM. It's a full OpenID SAML server. It's not just a broker to other IDM.
Right. So I'm gonna sit and I'm gonna set up all of the users of my application in Keycloak, and then if they're going to be associated with a Twitter authorization at some point, that's going to be something that the user does, or does the administrator have to set that up?
It depends. Like, if you have already your user in Keycloak and you have an email, and then you decide to give him also access to his Twitter account, we will try to match the emails and we say, hey, you already exist, and we will match that. And if it's a new user and logging in to his Twitter account, then we will create the user in Keycloak. Then you can also choose to be a really broker and just do read only to the Twitter user. You don't have to store it in Keycloak if you don't want to.
Right. So when somebody leaves the company and I want to remove their access to all of these apps, I'll go to Keycloak and I'll simply disable their account or remove their account, and that will fix everything. I don't have to go to the external services.
Exactly.
Okay. Okay. And how about setting up authorization profiles? If I want to be able to set up administrator groups or people who've got access to personal information, is that something that I do in Keycloak as well?
Yeah. So that all happens. So we have a whole complete administration console where you can set up groups, roles. That's That is if you want to do some basic role-based management. If you want to go even further in really fine-grained authorization, then we have a whole complete authorization layer. Maybe Stian can tell us more about that later. But yeah, that all happens from the administration console, which is, by the way, also exposed as red services. So if you don't want to use the admin console, you can also speak to the REST endpoints to do that if you want to optimize that or whatever, integrate that with another system.
Right. So I can set up a script that adds a new user, and in the process, it also calls all the REST endpoints to set up authentication and authorization for the new user.
Exactly. Yes.
Right. Are all of the capabilities that are on the web application exposed as REST endpoints, or is it just some of them?
Yeah, exactly. Everything that is exposed on the administration console is also accessible as a REST endpoint. The administration console is consuming these endpoints. So it's just a web app consuming these REST endpoints.
So now, when you're doing an authorization authentication system, one of the important things is being able to audit what happened. Are you logging all of this information? Do you have auditing tools?
Yes. By default, you can turn on our event listener, and you can choose what you want to listen to. And with extensions, you can also add your own events that you would like to listen to, and yeah, then you can read them, or again, with a REST endpoint, you can retrieve them if you want to put them in another system, and we have a complete auditing tool for that.
Right, okay. And so now, why did you write this? You know, was this an imperative for a Red Hat product? Was this something that you were doing in your spare time? Why did it happen?
I think maybe it's better if Jan answered that question, since he was one of the founders of the project. Don't you think so?
Yeah. So why did you do this thing, Stan?
Because it really solved a problem that all developers have, in my opinion. As I said in the beginning, developers hate to implement security. And when I go to a conference and I told her, okay, I have good news for you. You don't have to do that anymore. It's just setting up Keycloak server, installing the small library, adding some config, and you have authorization, and using known protocols, covering all the security holes. You don't have to care about that anymore. And you can see the people, the attendees, are really happy.
Yeah. So, I get that. I'm kind of digging into the business model motivation behind things. Okay. You know, is this all happening because Red Hat wants it to exist? Is it all happening because Stian had a business that he wanted to start? Is this all happening because you did it in your spare time and Red Hat loved you and wanted you to do it at work? You know, why is it all happening?
So actually, the story comes from there was a team on JBoss, so the division of Red Hat, that was coming to the end, and there was people that was needed something else to look at. And it wasn't really identity that we started looking at. We were primarily in the whole MBAS scope, so mobile platform as a service, which is now a completely dead topic. But as part of having that, then you need all these as a service things, right? So you need data as a service, you need identity as a service, and all these things. And at the time, we thought that identity was one of the things that application developers were struggling with, and one of the things that would be necessary for mobile devices and for modern sort of HTML5 type applications. So that's pretty much where we started with a proof of concept. Initially, Red Hat and JBoss wasn't really that excited about it. We didn't get many people on the project, and we didn't get anywhere with selling this as a product from Red Hat. So that's actually been a little bit of a struggle, but that quickly solved itself based on just the amount of traction that we got in the community, both in the existing JBoss community and outside of it. So just based on how much popularity the open source project got, we actually got further inside Red Hat as well, and we got more and more people on the team. So now we're a reasonably big team that's working on this today.
Right.
Not a service team, but
Well, remember the ForgeRock size team was only five people in 2010 anyway. So, is this available as a service on OpenShift as well, so that I can use it for as part of an application I'm building in Red Hat's cloud systems?
Yeah, so it's not available as a software as a service, as in you today you have to self-manage it. But we do have so the product called Red Hat Single Sign-On, we have those supported on OpenShift. And we also have Docker containers for Keycloak, and we have all the templates and everything that you need to run Keycloak on OpenShift as well. And in those cases, it's self-managed.
Right, right. No, this is all vital stuff, because that people say that you use your software, you marry your database, but your IDM system is kind of a symbiont that's living inside your body. You never get rid of it. So this is crucial for developers to be able to use a piece of open source software for IDM that doesn't lock them into a provider like Oracle or IBM or ForgeRock, who are simply there to suck their soul out. So I can see why it took off and why it got really big. How far up can it scale, do you think? You know, can you get to the stage of being used by a large enterprise for RBAC, or are you at some point going to have to go to a more grown-up solution?
So we have community users that use us with tens or millions of users, and we also have Red Hat, so product user customers that are deploying this in large scale. You know, obviously I can't go into names of any of these people, but it is used from anything from people that have a small project, they have a single website, they just want to get authentication going, up until big scale organizations that are using it and they're federating with government systems and they're doing all sorts of stuff. So it is already in use by big players.
Are there any you can tell us about? Because that does sound fascinating.
No, I'm afraid not. I don't want to get into trouble with it. We will have shortly. We are gathering, trying to get some public references, community users, and we did have a big survey, and we did get some names on there, and we're hoping to be able to get in touch with these companies and get their blessing in actually advertising it. There's actually one I can mention. So there is a company called Santander, which is a big financial company in Norway. It's probably the biggest financial company in Norway, and they're more than happy to tell that they're using Keycloak. So they're a company that embraces open source and have the true spirit of actually working with open source and contributing back and going to conferences and talking about how they're using their software. And they have a talk actually at, I don't know if you know about JavaZone, but they are actually presenting a talk at JavaZone about how they're using Keycloak for themselves.
Mm-hmm. So Santander is a pretty big reference. You know, that's one of Europe's largest financial institutions.
Sorry. Wrong name. it's not Santander. It's Storebrand.
Okay.
A bit more Norwegian sounding name. So it's Storebrand, not Santander. Yeah. I made that mistake now every time I tell the story. Okay.
We'll just have to hope that comes out in the edit in a minute. Yeah, it's kind of cool. So I've had a look at your GitHub site for Keycloak. It's very busy. I went to go and look at all the forks, and I get this delightful screen up that tells me we can't display this because there are too many forks. So it looks like you've got a very busy community out there. Do you take a lot of pull requests, or do you tend to do most of the improvement work internally?
We have quite a few, actually. I would say we get about one every day from the community, maybe not quite that. So we get at least like three or four, and we do get some really big ones as well, people that have proper put in the work and really designed and implemented a full functional feature with all the testing, all the documentation, all that stuff, you know. So, yeah.
And you've got a lot of active contributors there. I'm just looking through the list of them there, and there's a lot of people doing a lot of stuff. So this seems to be really working for you, using the GitHub governance and letting people contribute to you direct. Do you require a contributor agreement to put any of this code in, or is this all license in, license out?
So it's all under the Apache license. And the assumption, I guess, on a GitHub is that when you contribute something to a repository, you are contributing it under that license.
It says that in the terms of service on GitHub, so one makes that assumption.
Yeah.
And I assume knowing your lawyers at Red Hat as I do, I think they'd be very happy with you working on the license in, license out basis rather than having a contributor agreement. So this is all good. Do you have any non-Red Hat committers on your master, or is everyone that I see here who's able to commit on master a Red Hat employee?
Everyone is Red Hat employees today. Yeah,
right.
Something that we are interested in changing in the future, but right now there isn't anyone that has been involved long enough and have the kind of deep knowledge base and been contributing for a long enough period to get right access yet. But we hope that, you know, one day that will change and we'll get more players involved. But we definitely want to start. Sorry?
Go ahead.
Yeah, we definitely want to have more and more of a community feedback when it comes to what direction we want to do and how we design new features, as well as, you know, contributing new features and all the kind of stuff. So we're trying to, as much as possible, to engage with the community and trying to improve on that aspect.
So is the GitHub repository your live Git, or is this being mirrored from an internal develop first then release sort of thing?
So it's the master is the upstream stuff. There is no hidden features in the product. Basically, when we create the product, we just take a snapshot of master, and that's what we productize. And the Red Hat product, the only difference is there is the way that it's been built and the way that we support it, right? So we basically take a certain point of Keycloak, and then we support that for a year or whatever, right? But in community, we don't have the capacity, obviously, to support previous versions. So there we require people to move on to the latest version or to, you know, self-support themselves.
I'm a little curious why you're not using GitHub's issue system then.
It's basically from the sheer amount of work and requirements and all these things and planning boards that we get. So we're using Jira for that reason.
Yeah, Jira. I've loved and hated Jira over the years. It's like when it's set up properly, it's actually not bad. But it's like this thing that's just way too flexible, and I've seen it not be flexed the right way. You know, this should have been concave, but it's convex or something. I don't know. It's just crazy that way. How hard is this to start with? How smart do I have to be to integrate this into a brand new app?
Not that smart, really. So we strive to make it as simple as possible, especially the getting started sort of experience. And we are planning now. So one of our next tasks is that we're going to focus on trying to get an easier, better getting started experience. So having something where you can, in a number of tutorials in 10, 15 minutes, you can learn various different concepts, right? So in your lunch break on one day, you can learn about starting up Keycloak. And then the next day on the lunch break, you secure a couple of applications and services. And maybe the third day you do some social brokering, that kind of stuff. And making it super simple and then really reducing the number of steps that you need to do these things. But, you know, taking an HTML5 application, for instance, securing that is it takes 3-4 lines of some wiring code, and that's about it.
Well, that's really great. Do you have a Docker image I can play in?
Yeah. Well, we do have the Keycloak server in a Docker image. And we do have some Java-based examples that you can run as a Docker image. But that part is, I wouldn't say that that has the best experience right yet. But that's definitely the direction we want to do. Today, the best place to start is to look at our documentation. There's a getting started guide that walks you through installing it locally and then going on to how you secure some Java applications. So the best today, the best experience is for Java developers, but we want to change that and make it the similar experience for anyone.
So besides a good JVM, what are the other server requirements?
That's it.
Oh, well, that's simple then. Okay.
So it's you install the JVM. Once you have that, it's a zip file. You unzip it, then you run a script, and it starts up. That's it.
Clearly, if this is, you know, you're eating on dog food and Red Hat is using that, there must be a way to scale it horizontally and they all coordinate with each other. Is this set to scale?
Yeah, we've had clustering capabilities built in from the start. So Tcook is actually layered on top of the Wildfly application server, which is a full-fledged Java EE server. We don't use the Java EE part, but we use the underlying things like transaction managers and clustering capabilities and caching capabilities and all that kind of stuff. And then obviously they have a really super fast HTTP web server. And those are the parts that kind of enabled us to focus on the identity or the part that we want to focus on and not having to deal with these things. So that has helped us a lot in making something that scales and can be clustered to scale out.
Is this the kind of thing that you could then auto scale with something like Kubernetes?
Yeah, absolutely. So right at the moment, we've got the nice experience for OpenShift with clustered. We'd have that for the product, but we're working mm-hmm. on getting that to the community as well and having our Docker images in a way that you can easily spin them up on Kubernetes and scale them up as well as you want to.
How about testing? How thoroughly is this tested?
That is tested pretty thoroughly. So we have a mantra where we want to do proper functional testing, integration testing of everything. So we have very little unit testing, but we test all the APIs, all the interactions, and all these kind of things. And we test with different databases, with different LDAPs. We have automated testing for social login, all these kind of aspects. So, in fact, I have a SIM card that I use to register accounts with Facebook and Google and Twitter so that we can do automated testing.
Wow, that sounds cool. And I see on your blog, you just released 4.0. What's the newest cool parts between 3.0 and 4.0 that have been added?
Not much.
You just wanted to roll a version number.
No, yeah. Well, actually, that is a slightly funny and slightly Red Hat requirement kind of thing. So when we do release a new product version, we are supposed to roll the number. So 4.0 isn't a big 9-month piece of work. It's basically let's get started on a new number.
Yeah, okay. And I think I sort of went into this before, but let's say I have an existing system that's maybe running on a MediaWiki. How hard would it be to integrate this into the auth system of MediaWiki?
So if you can find, if it supports OpenID Connect or supports SAML, or you can find a plugin that does either of those, then you can secure it with Keep.
Okay, so it wouldn't be too hard then. Good.
It depends, right? So some things are very easy to secure with OpenID Connect. Some things have, just in their own config files, you just put in the URL pretty much for the identity provider, and there you go. But other things are not so easy. So that depends. But, OpenID Connect is getting much, much more traction. And it has what's called a well-known discovery endpoint. So it's a single URL that you can hit to get all the configuration metadata for an OpenID Connect provider. And that can make it very, very easy for people to build in OpenID Connect support in their in their frameworks and libraries and you know, applications like MediaWiki and that kind of stuff.
So I've got a system at home with quite a few web applications running now. I'm running a Nextcloud box. I do have a copy of MediaWiki installed. I'm really looking for some kind of very lightweight solution I can run in a Raspberry Pi so that I can add all of our all the people who live in the house, our guests and our visitors, to gain access to the right applications. Should I be looking at KeyCloak to do that for me, or should I be looking somewhere else?
So the Raspberry Pi has, what is it, 512, or is it 1 gig of memory?
I think there's 2 and 4 gig ones now. The big four core ones have got more memory.
All right, so it's definitely lightweight, and it will definitely run on a small constrained device. You know, I'm assuming that you don't have the hugest amount of requests on that, right? But yeah, in those respect, the one sort of restriction that we do have today is because it's JVM based, and JVM is a little bit memory heavy initially, right? Because you need to load all your classes, and there is some inefficiency in how it deals with that. So you have a little bit of wasted memory consumption on a JVM. But if you have 1 gigabyte, you're fine, right? So I've got KeyCloak running now on OpenShift Online, the freebie version, and it's running at something like 370 megabytes, and that is a super constrained pod, and that's fine for you know, lower volume.
Right. Well, the other thing about the Raspberry Pi is it's got an ARM chip in it, so but as you're presumably a pure Java app, that's not going to make me unhappy.
No, that should be fine.
Right.
We don't test for ARM, but in theory it should work.
Well, you know, I think this issue of having a home IAM system is actually going to get more and more relevant as people get more and more devices, because otherwise they're going to find people like Amazon or Google are the IAM provider for their home, and they'll find themselves locked in. And I think we need to be, as a free and open source software community, looking at ways of giving people IAM that works in their home and doesn't require you to be a genius to install and run it. So I think this is actually a very relevant sector.
I don't know if you remember the old OpenID Connect, so the one that predated OpenID, the one that was before OpenID Connect, which was more of a bring your own identity provider, where you could literally log into anything with your own identity provider, and the first time you logged in, you would register your own identity provider. So that really fits in what you just said there, right? To not end up in this case where, you know, basically Google is the thing that you use to log into everything.
Or actually, I think the biggest risk is of Amazon being the thing, because, you know, with their Echo boxes that they've got, those are going to become your identity provider, because they're going to be using skills plugins to control all the devices in your home. I don't think people are really aware of the fact that it's not just their spoken commands they're giving away, they're also giving away control of all their devices. The other use case that strikes me is, of course, I'm on the board of the Open Source Initiative. I'm on the board of the Document Foundation. We have systems. We need IAM. Now, the Document Foundation, we're using LDAP. Would we be able to put KeyCloak in front of LDAP and use it as an easy way of migrating to a more lightweight solution?
Yeah, that works. And depending on what LDAP vendor you have, it will be either super smooth or a little bit of a bumpy ride. Because we test with some, and then I'm sure you're aware that LDAP has very many strange behavior that differs between vendor to vendor. So we obviously not today able to cater for all of these, but you know, through community contributions, we hope that we can get these things sorted, and it will be easier to use any.
Yeah, yeah. Well, I mean, the priority here will be to simplify, because the difficulty with old-fashioned IAM solutions like LDAP is that they have become insanely complex. They have layer upon layer of incomprehensible complexity. And so I would look at KeyCloak as a way of kind of masking that out and letting me migrate to something I'm more in control of. Do you share this vision? Is this what you want to do too?
That's
what I tell people is, if you want to, if you have an LDAP with KeyCloak, it's a perfect solution to do a slow migration to a more modern IDM solution, because you can so you plug to your LDAP and slowly you can start writing the user from LDAP in your KeyCloak server. And so you can slowly, if you want to, build your LDAP out. Or you can still keep it and use it as a read only. But as you said, it will mask the complexity. You will log in, but at the end, it will your app will be speaking to KeyCloak, and you will obtain a JWT token from OpenID Connect, which is really clear. It's JSON, easy to parse, and yeah. That's what I advise to people to do if they want to have a smooth migration.
Well, that raises the question then. Suppose I want to get rid of my old crufty LDAP servers, and I have access to most of the code that my organization is running, so I move all those over to KeyCloak, initially seeded by the LDAP server. Can KeyCloak emulate an LDAP server for legacy apps that I don't have the source for? Either of you?
No, we can't. That's part of, obviously, we want to avoid feature creep, right? So LDAP, in our mind, for web applications and REST services, is legacy stuff. And so we don't want that. If you want LDAP, then, you migrate from your old unmaintained LDAP to something like Apache DS, for instance, an open source project, and you can continue having LDAP there if you want, right? And then you move your new applications to KeyCloak, and then you have KeyCloak read and write users to LDAP, so that you have a seamless experience between the two, the legacy applications and the ones that you managed to pull.
Okay, and is this primarily intended for... I'm not going to say on-premises. That's not the word I mean. I mean, I'm supposed to integrate KeyCloak into my own system. Is there any chance of this being offered as a security as a service on hosted environments?
We've discussed it, but we don't think there is enough money in it to get value back from how expensive it is to run it, right? And you do need the initial upfront, and you to get traction for software as a service, you need to offer free accounts, and free accounts is a hugely expensive thing to offer to people. So right now we've decided that that's not something we're interested in. That might change in the future.
Okay, and so I think we'd probably rather have people doing is using OpenShift and paying you money for that, and then just dropping KeyCloak in as part of that solution, right?
Yeah.
Yes.
So, okay. We're not going to make money out of KeyCloak as a product, because it is too efficient and you don't need that many cores. So today's business model, Red Hat sells products by cores. And for a big company, you might need, maybe a few nodes for KeyCloak for redundancy. And so you're talking very few cores and it's not a lot of money. So the idea for Red Hat is obviously to upsell and sell a portfolio and not sell individual products, right? So to become, a vendor for your company for more than just one piece. And that's
most of the projects that are sort of the big projects inside Red Hat that are open source tend to stay like the direction is set by Red Hat. Do you ever envision this becoming more of a community project with an outside governance?
Yeah, so well, actually more and more projects from Red Hat today are actually a community project that we are contributing to, where we don't have the ownership. It's actually, it used to be the other way, where Red Hat had many, many projects that where we would take the ownership of the project and we would own it and we would develop in a certain direction. But today we're actually picking more and more existing solutions out there, and rather than trying to compete with open source projects that are getting community, we try to pick the good popular players and we try to make them better by true contributions. And
cool,
with KeyCloak,
cool.
you know, we will try to open it up more and make it more available to the community as a whole, right? And let the community steer the direction. So the one thing there is obviously the fact that we want to avoid feature creep. So we need to find the right balance, right, of letting everyone having a say and steering it in the right direction and making sure that we don't end up getting a big bloated thing. That is one of the reasons why a lot of people are moving away from other solutions and to Kiko.
And speaking of roadmap, what's on the roadmap? What are you still missing?
Oh, that list is long.
Okay. How about the top three things? You got three things that you can tell me?
Yeah, okay. So let's have a few cool things. So one thing that we're thinking about is that we are thinking about having support for proper support for multiple data centers and replications between them. We have some early preview kind of thing here where it requires you to have an active replication of your databases, which you're running on top of a cloud solution is a pretty complicated thing to do. And then we also require our caches to be replicated. So you need to have two complex systems that you need to get running replicated mode across multi-data centers. This is a tricky thing to do. So we want to get rid of the database part of that setup and then to be able to replicate everything through the caches and then have the database move out to a slightly different area of the code base. So that's one thing that we want to do. And that was also around helping us to scale better. And we're hoping that we can, in the same kind of re-architecture, we're thinking that we can also start supporting a bit of sharding and that kind of stuff to be able to actually kind of function at a proper internet scale where you can then distribute the load to different data centers from different geographics or based on different user sets or whatever you want. And we're also looking at supporting seamless zero downtime upgrades. So today we require you to stop everything, to upgrade the database first, and then start everything up again. And that's something that we really, really want to figure out how to do, is to be able to do completely zero upgrade. Obviously, an important aspect of that is to have something like Kubernetes or OpenShift underneath the covers so that you can then roll out and redirect users in a seamless way.
And are you doing anything in KeyCloak to prevent stupid companies from storing their passwords in clear text?
Yeah, we decide how you store your password. So the hashing algorithms are, we have a secure option by default. And the nice point here is that if you were doing your password hashing algorithm yourself, you might, you know, the day that you wrote your application, you might do it according to the best practices on that day and then forget about it. And then 20 years later, you know. But, you know, we will continuously monitor what is the best password hashing algorithm, and we will upgrade and switch the default when we see a need to do so. And we also update credentials on the fly when users are re-authenticating. So we are rehashing and switching the hashing algorithm over time as well. You know, so those are things that, you know, we do that you probably wouldn't do if you were rolling out this kind of stuff yourself.
Now, there's the old problem of who watches the watchers. How do you ensure the security of your releases, and have you had any interesting breaches?
We get feedback from the community. We have lots of companies that do their own independent audits of KeyCloak. We obviously do some, you know. So I think from the fact that it's open source, you can obviously, there is the endless discussion about whether or not open source is more or less secure. But I believe that through a community that you can outsmart hackers in a better way than you can if you have closed source.
Okay, we're almost out of time, getting close to the bottom of the hour here. So I do have a really difficult question for most guests to answer because it requires set math, set subtraction. So we asked a lot of questions, and you probably had a lot of things you wanted to say. Did we miss anything yet?
No, I think it's been a very good talk. I can't really think of anything other than, you know, we're always happy to have more users of it and more contributors.
Great. And Sebastian, same question.
Yeah, as you said, you covered everything. Just please contribute for people who are listening. If you want to contribute, if your code is good, if you have test, you have opened a ticket, you document it, and if it fits a need that we all need, we will just ship it in the next release or two releases after. So don't be afraid and just come over the mailing list and introduce yourself, and we will be more than happy to help you.
Sounds great. Two final questions for both of you. What's your favorite scripting language, and what editor do you spend all day in? We'll start with Sian.
It's Bash, because I love pipes.
Okay. And your editor?
I can do everything with AWK and sed and pipes.
Okay.
And I use IntelliJ.
Yeah, of course, because you're doing a lot of Java. Yeah, it seems rather reasonable. And Sebastian, same two questions.
Okay, so scripting language. Well, I don't know if Groovy is a scripting language.
That qualifies.
So that's my language. And editor, to be honest, right now I have Eclipse, IntelliJ, and Code open. Depending on which I'm working on, I have different stuff open. Let's be honest. I think Eclipse is my favorite.
Okay, cool. And I'm getting used to using Code now. It's actually it's the first IDE I've ever used, but I'm using it with a strongly typed language. I'm using it with Dart and Flutter right now, and Emacs doesn't quite cut it for that. I still use Emacs for everything else, reading my mail, being on IRC, editing Perl code, that sort of thing. So, guys, it's been great having you come on the show talking about this. I'm sure this will be exposure for a whole new crop of people to come in and either be users or contribute back. So glad you take the time out of your busy day to talk to us about KeyCloak. Thanks for being on here.
Thank you.
Awesome. That was Stian Thorgerson and Sebastian Blanc talking to us about KeyCloak. What'd you think there, Simon?
I think it's very cool stuff. IAM is a real challenge to most developers, either because implementing something like SAML is a nightmare, or because administering something like LDAP is a nightmare. And this seems to solve both problems in one fell swoop, and that means it's very promising indeed. The fact that it's running on a JVM is pretty good if you're at mid-scale web hosting. It kind of sucks if you're running a home network and want to stick it on a Raspberry Pi. But I'm going to have a go at that and see if I can get it running, because I really do need some sort of solution so that all of my devices are being managed by me rather than by a proprietary company in America. So overall, I'm really very happy with that as a set of solutions, and I wish them every success with it. What do you think? Are you going to use it?
I'm not doing anything that operates at scale yet. So I'm still happy with my hashed passwords and my simple little Postgres database. So until we need something more fancy than that, I don't think I'll be using it for either of my clients. Well, I don't get to decide for ZipRecruiter, but I don't know what they're using for something at this scale yet. I know there's a lot of authentication issues internally. Not issues. I shouldn't say that. It makes it sound bad. No. But there's a lot of things to think about when you're operating a company like ZipRecruiter that has, millions of active users, and how to deal with all that, and the fact that you got to keep everything secure. So, other than that, I don't have anything. It sounds like the project's being run well. Sounds like there's a lot of contribution, multiple commits daily, I think, on the thing. So this is definitely a cool project. Without the I don't know how they came to us. I think I was somebody on the project team emailed me. But that's how most people get on this show. I'll talk about that in a second. But speaking of that, upcoming guests, we're just down at the bottom of the show. We have to do this. So Pillar Project is next week. They're claiming another blockchain show. They're claiming that we're building the world's best cryptocurrency and token wallet, and that will become the dashboard for your digital life. And we'll
I love it. I just love it. I want one. Sell me one.
It's perfect marketing. We'll have to see how they differentiate themselves from the other 400 blockchain things that we've had on this show.
And there's a new one coming up. We'll be an ICO to fund it as well, and then we'll just be in buzzword and slightly dodgy software nirvana.
And I should never berate the upcoming guests. I should stop doing that. Okay, come on, because otherwise they'll cancel and then I'll have a hole in my schedule. Following that, Friendica, which is a decentralized architecture with no central authority or ownership, and relationships can be made across any compatible systems, creating a network of internet scale sites made up of many smaller sites. And I bet they use a blockchain. Just guessing. FreeCodeCamp, there we go. Something entirely different. The owner of FreeCodeCamp approached me about being on the show. It's not so much about open source software as it is about learning how to create open source software. And this has been a great project, been around for many years. I learned to code for free. And what's great is they're also set up opportunities for you to actually practice your coding skills for NGOs around the world. So you can actually be contributing to the world of software, for especially for the people that matters the most. Just added to the schedule, I don't know how to pronounce this, A-I-O-N, Aion, Aion? I should have asked.
No, Aion? Never heard of
it. It's something. Whatever it is. It's a multi-tier system designed to address unsolved questions of scalability and interoperability in blockchain networks. This must just be the new buzzword.
So can we maybe suggest to Leo that we rename this the Blockchain Technology Show?
Yes, you know, this week in blockchain.
We have a different blockchain technology every week.
And a totally different aspect. Okay, the next one after that also just added since the last show we did, which was 2 weeks ago. And thank you guys for sort of forgiving me for skipping a week, but I was really, really busy last week, and that was really nice that I could skip a week. Linstore, that's a high availability DRDB, which is basically the back-end storage for distributed systems, clustered systems. So in detail, Linstore is an open source management tool designed to manage block storage devices for large Linux server clusters. And its primary use case is currently to provide persistent Linux block storage for Kubernetes and OpenShift environments. Stuff dealing a lot with today's show, actually, it was kind of fun. Also added to the list since last week, we've been busy actually, Monero, which is cryptocurrency, but private, untraceable, and fungible. So another blockchain. What is this, 3 out of 5 coming up for blockchain? Nice.
Yeah, I'm definitely going to write to Leo about this. We need to rename.
Please, if you have suggestions for anything other than blockchain shows, please contact the community coordinator or project leader and have them email me, merlin@stoneangel.com. You can get to that address by going to the homepage for this show, twit.tv/floss, which has been on the bottom of the screen down here for pretty much the entire show if you're on the video, but also just Google for Floss Weekly and you'll find me. It's the first hit. We have a live stream at 9:30 a.m. Pacific time on Wednesdays at live.twit.tv. We take a number of questions from there. I think today's number was 0. So that's live. We just instead discussed Minky Whale for a little while in there. That was kind of fun. Anyway,
you follow us. Got hands off that Minky. Minkies are good things.
Yeah, no, they're good. They're good, but they're like salmon. What I didn't say in the beginning of the show is that the quota in Norway is set by environmentalists, and the actual fact is they only harvest about half of the quota every year. So they're completely in great shape in Norway, and they're only vaguely related to the ones up the Pacific Northwest that my sister-in-law was complaining about. So anyway, yeah, they're totally different things, okay? You can follow us at Floss Weekly on Google Plus. You can follow us on @FlossWeekly on Twitter. You can follow me at Randall L. Schwartz on Google Plus and @Merlin on Twitter. Just to tell you, upcoming, the studio is closed on July 4th, so we'll have no show that week as well, so everybody in the United States can go party. I'm going to be in Norway on a cruise in July. We're working out the details for me in Bergen to be able to get off the ship and go eat some Minky Whale somewhere with the local Linux user group there, as I said, sort of at the top of the show. I'm going to be in San Diego the following week to go to a low-carb conference. And so if anybody's in San Diego that wants to hook up with me, watch my tweets, watch my Foursquare check and things like that, and you can tell where I'm actually going to be. I have just been confirmed as at least as press to be able to go to All Things Open in Raleigh, North Carolina in October. That was such an amazing show last year. I'm really glad I get to go back. But I also pitched an hour-long talk on Flutter, come on. And so hopefully they'll accept that. So I'll be both a speaker and a press person at All Things Open. But either way, I'm definitely going. And of course, I'm going to be at Siegel in November, at least as press again, probably doing my Flutter talk there as well. Maybe a series of Flutter talks, maybe a totally new one that I've totally invented. So I'm big on Flutter, doing some great stuff with it. I was just did a 5-minute demo yesterday, 5-minute lightning talk yesterday, where I create and live code a Flutter app in front of the room, and the demo worked. The demo gods did not bite me. It actually worked. If you Google for Randall Schwartz Flutter and Google video, you'll see that little demo, the 5-minute demo, and it's really impressive. Anyway, that's enough for me. What do you want to plug there, Simon? Besides me.
I feel overwhelmed after all that, Randall. I'm going to be at OSCON. So do come see me at OSCON. That's the 16th to the 19th of July. I think this is the first one in years that you've missed, Randall. You're going to be on a cruise for this one. So I'll be there.
I'll
holding
be in Norway.
Down the I'll be holding down the fort for the Floss Weekly. If you're going to be at OSCON, do come find me. We're still trying to work out if we can manage to have a show that week, what with Randall pigging out on Whale, with me roaming the halls in the Oregon Convention Center. It could be tricky to have a show that week, but we're kind of investigating still. And then in August, I would love you all to come to Sheffield in the United Kingdom to Og Camp, which is the premier unconference for makers and builders and open source fanatics in the United Kingdom. We'd love to have you there. Tickets are very inexpensive, and you can buy them now at the low, low price of whatever it is that they cost today. So do please come along to that. In September, I've got a sequence of speaking events. We have the LibreOffice conference in Tirana, Albania. I've never been to Albania before. It's a really hot venue for open source software development at the moment. Lots of enthusiastic people getting into open source for the first time. And so I encourage you to come along to the LibreOffice conference and hear about the cool stuff that LibreOffice is doing. And then I'll also be in Bern in Switzerland at Dinacon giving the keynote, and at Mindtrek in Tampere in Finland, both in October, giving the keynotes, rather than coming over to Raleigh, North Carolina. I would love you to follow me on Twitter, where I am WebMink, not to be confused with Minky Whale. And I would also tolerate you following me on Google Plus and other places where you'll probably find me as WebMink as well. I think that's everything, Randall.
Cool. And Simon, thank you once again for being the co-host. I just want to say the reason I am missing OSCON and going on this cruise is it'll be the first time I'll be north of the Arctic Circle in the summer. So I'm going to have, I think, 3 days in a row without a sunset. And that's been on my bucket list for decades. So it's going to be great to be able to go there. And just because I had to miss OSCON, which is really unfortunate because I was in Austin for 2 years and it's back in my hometown of Portland this year. And I won't get to go.
And we have a big party. We've got a big party for the 20th birthday of open source. OSI is hosting a party at OSCON, and we would love you all to be there. Unfortunately, Randall won't be there this year because he'll be eating whale inside the Arctic Circle. You do know that you know, drinking in the daytime is forbidden, and so that's 3 days you can't drink because it's never going to be night.
I'm canceling.
See that?
Oh, no.
There you go.
All right. Hey, Simon, thanks once again, and we'll see you all again next week on Floss Weekly.